and roll. Man, I am like very psyched. Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Today, we're doing the show live here in the lovely studios at WMFO in Medford, 91.5. If you're listening on the radio, yes, people do still listen to the radio. Or maybe you're listening online, but however you're listening, thank you. What we did there to start things off, we played our two theme songs, The Charm, So Pretty, and The Dogmatics, I Love Rock and Roll, in their entirety. That was awesome. I don't get to do that all the time, so I was pretty psyched. I'm so psyched about a lot of things that are happening here today in Medford. I just being able to say Medford's a lot of fun, you know? I'm joined in the studio with my friend and longtime musician, music writer, radio personality, who some of you may remember as Charles Rivers, Craig Mack.
Yeah.
Craig, hello, Craig. Thanks for joining us on this very special episode.
Craig Mack, like the rapper, right? Flavor in your ear.
You're a rapper now?
No, you remember the rapper from the 90s, right? Craig Mack?
Wow.
So anyhow. But no, I go by the full Monty now, you know, Charles Craig Terlino. You know,
I mean, that's how I remember you.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I was thinking of when I was on my way over here today?
Yeah.
I drove an hour to get here. Little less than a half a mile from here is where I met you, in Teal Square. Probably around 2002.
Oh, that dark alley on the side there.
I won't say what we were selling in the alley. No, I'm just kidding. We weren't selling anything in the alley. You were actually at a cafe. You were a writer then. I think you were writing for the Weekly Dig.
Yeah, I was writing for the Dig back in early 2000s, working for them. I worked for them for 13, almost 14 years, off and on.
You were good at it, too.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other conversation that the guys from Dig Boston... If you ever want to have them on, the originators of it, be able to talk to you good and plenty about those days.
I'm usually fond of most. Joe was the guy that started it, right?
Joe Bonney started Dig Boston as an editor. He came aboard. He was doing the Pit Report. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. It was like a hardcore punk kind of thing.
Right, but it was Jeff Lawrence, you know, the media giant of the time who took down the Phoenix, you know. He didn't just take the Phoenix down, but he, you know, I think he accessed the times. You know, print was diminishing; things were becoming free. He was a little progressive in terms of all that.
It was a good competition for the Boston Phoenix, because I had just moved back here. I moved back and forth from this area so many times, but that time I had just moved back here and I was living in Somerville, and the Phoenix was still going strong, and the Weekly Dig and BCN and FNX and AAF, are any of them still here anymore?
Well, I think they left when Boston was taken down as well. But
you know what's still here? WFMO 91.5.
You know,
they're still here.
Real quick,
we're here.
We're in a real radio station.
We are
surrounded by how many albums do you think?
So many. Mike Newman's,
I mean,
on the board.
When
here.
I say albums, I mean vinyl on the wall.
They're everywhere. Yeah, there's everywhere. Probably about a gazillion or so.
I didn't
count every one, but I think it's about a gazillion.
When you say gazillion, though, what would you say if you had to give a number?
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, how do you count all these?
Half a million?
There's thousands of them, right?
I'm not even going to guess, because this room's full, the other room's full. By the way, Mike Newman was nice enough to let us show.
You're
on
welcome.
His time slot. Thank
just
you,
don't
Mike.
Swear.
Yeah, he's made it very clear.
Well,
you don't, me don't
we're
swear.
Try.
I've already got a reputation as someone with a dirty mouth, and I haven't been on 5 minutes.
Well, be careful. Okay?
I will.
I'm
going to
be.
I
if I can, keep myself in line, then you can keep yourself in line.
It's a good practice for me.
You know what I want to ask you, Craig, before we get into our very special topic today is.
Yeah.
The last 5 years or so, you've been doing some really interesting projects with a lot of musicians. Tell us about the projects. Tell us about all the musicians you want to mention.
All right. And do you really think they were interesting or are interesting? Or
dude, what do you mean? You're very interesting.
Right,
what are you talking
you.
About?
All right, I just want to make sure.
You think I would ask you if I didn't think you were interested?
I want to make sure this wasn't for show. No, but so what I've been doing the last 5 years is I just got back to, I mean, I was playing music quite a bit through the 90s. Very much, but I was young, didn't, you know, I didn't know what we were doing. So about 5 years ago, maybe even with 2019,
right before the pandemic,
right, I went to Graceland. I'd never been to Graceland before. Me and my girlfriend went, and you know, I wasn't a
Francesca.
Huge Elvis fan. Yeah, You got to drop names on
that's
the show.
Right. Okay. I like Francesca.
Good for her.
Punk
all right, Francesca.
Rock,
yep. But we went there, and I don't know. I think it gave us both, in some sense, an upkick about like, hey, you know, like, we're musicians. I mean, if you've ever been to Nashville, if you've ever been to Memphis, you can't leave as a musician feeling like, you know, you should have been a part of it, or you should go do something. And in that sense, I wasn't playing music for about 15 years. I put it down. I put it down at an amateur level, and I was dedicated to starting it back up and being a professional. So I accessed a bunch of professional musicians in the Boston scene. They loved my idea, and I said, you know, I want to do this event. I want to bring Elvis Presley back from the dead, but I want to do it my way. Seriously, right? I want to do it my way. But, like, not the boy from Tupelo that everyone just loves. Elvis Presley, Austin Butler. No, I wanted the man from Memphis, the guy that had an appetite for drugs, you know, women, fast cars, motorcycles, you know, all that stuff. That was rock and roll. I mean, his lifestyle gave birth and defined the 70s and 80s rock and roll culture. It didn't go in a good direction. So I wanted to bring him back from the dead and sort of pay homage to, you know, the man out of the jumpsuit, the songs that weren't performed live, you know, the pimp, the Stax guy. So that's what that project was all about. But, you know.
Well, I know what happened.
I almost swore.
You had a big show set up, and it was March 20th, 2020. I don't mean to laugh, but it got down the toilet.
Right.
But you got like Gene Dante and Heather
Grunewald on harmonica.
Yeah, she's
Gene
great.
Dante, who was, you know, had a heavy hand in rock scene, still does. Gene Dante and the Future Starlets. I believe he's got a lot of acting going on up his sleeve too.
Yeah, he's got an acting career now.
But even before that, you know, he was sort of I think he did his own presentation or production with someone else of Hedwig.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So he's made a name for himself, and I just kind of wanted someone like that to
who were some
to,
of the others
because
you had
shoes.
You had a lot of people involved in that.
We
Elvis
had Lennox
project.
Rodney involved, who's he's a singer and a great friend of mine from the South Shore. A lot of the people that I grew up with, if they were good and I'm doing something, I kind of want to involve them. You know, it's just like get the bedroom rock star to the stage if you can. And I feel like I've had opportunities and privileges to do that for people as a journalist, kind of just pay it forward. With hope that, you know, if you keep tipping everyone and helping, something will work out for yourself. But, you know, it's always going to be hard work, you know, running a band, starting a band. So that band lasted through the pandemic. I think it was good to have something for all of us.
It was a very ambitious project.
Yeah, everyone's just like, are you guys crazy? And I'm like, well, we're not out, you know, like playing shows really until it was okay to do it. But we got together masked in a very big room and played this music, kept ourselves entertained and happy.
I remember you made really nice posters. They were up all over town. And then March
pandemic
13th,
hit.
The world shut down.
It
and
hit.
That was the end of... I felt really bad for you, man. I really did.
Well,
and we all did,
thank
really.
You, but, you know, I wasn't at home crying in my beer or anything.
You know, we have a lot of mutual friends, so the whole New Alliance crew and everything.
It's kind of relieved, actually.
Okay. All right. Let's fast forward then, because you have another bit. You go big when you go big. Talk about the next project.
Well,
that's really...
I have absolutely idea. I'll be very quite honest. Like, I have absolutely no idea. Never did. When I pick up a guitar and want to start a band, I don't know what I'm doing. Didn't go to school for it. I don't know. You know, and that's why, you know, if there's anything that's intrinsic or spiritual in nature, it's the things that make you that you don't really, you know, you know, I guess, force upon yourself.
Yeah.
So anyhow, so I don't know what I'm doing. I just like, I don't know, you know, I like something, I create it. There's a producer in me that wants to bring things together, find the right people. And that's what music has turned into. So, right, the projects, right, like Elvis. And now I'm doing something that's commemorating Waylon Jennings.
But wild.
But Waylon Jennings, and the reason why is the man's persona is nothing short of rock and roll.
Oh,
I'm not going to go too crazy on this, but nothing short of rock and roll. He you know, he played with Buddy Holly and the Crickets. He was the guy who gave his seat to the Big Bopper, unfortunately. But fortunately, maybe, you know, because I don't think the Big Bopper would have been asking us if you sure Hank done it that way. So, which is an important question to the current state of not just country music, but music in general. As a journalist, again, here I go. I gotta send a message and say I don't like the way things have turned out with music all, you know. And I'm older, but it doesn't mean I'm old. It just means technology has really tightened its grip around it.
Yeah.
So I love the humanist elements of music, live music, what we'll be talking about shortly, and playing it. And not being in the studio or in my bedroom. I did that for so long. It was the most depressing circumstance. I think a band needs to be out playing live. And, oh, you're playing a cover band and a tribute band. Well, thanks for the label, but if you noticed Elvis, if you've noticed Waylon or Johnny Cash, well, maybe not Johnny Cash because he wrote a bunch of music.
Ooh, that was a good bunch, save right there.
A bunch
there.
Of music.
That was a good save right there. You know, the FCC is listening, so we have to be. We can't be we can't be a normal Blowing Smoke show.
So anyhow,
that was almost strike one, but no.
But you know what I want to say though, you're no Ogie from Muskogee, so I was really surprised right. that you know you went. Waylon Jennings is one of the highwaymen, right?
Yeah,
so
but he's part you know of a again cool, he's cool cut from the cloth too. Of a rock and roll. You know, he transmits his music through a country western ensemble. And he's an independent, and Willie.
You ended up doing more shows with this project than the Elvis project.
We've been touring. Yeah, we've been touring all around the country. We've been playing all around the New England area. And just trying to get our name out there. And
all around the country. We played Greenfield, Mass, Worcester, Mass. We did an outdoor festival in Oxford.
Every state.
I'm just joking, man.
Okay, don't knock it till you see it, right?
Hey, I'm not. I saw it online. I saw a video. I've seen video of you guys, and you guys are great, man.
So, but it's the live experience that's important there, because the videos and the clips is just somebody's crappy little camera or whatever, you know. That's all right, right?
I like it.
But, yeah, thank you. It's been fun. We're going to be doing it a lot more, but it's a tribute band. It's to appease the fan base because I'm a music
it's
lover
cool,
too.
It's cool though. It's cool. I mean, who does Waylon Jennings tribute bands?
Waylon. Yeah. Not Waylon.
Oh, come on.
He was
man.
And he was born
Waylon.
He was born with the
Waylon.
He was born Waylon, but they didn't want to call him that cuz Waylon in Texas is that's
it's
like the upper
my
end
accent,
of the highway.
Dude, it's just my accent. Waylon Jennings. How's that?
But that's fine. But name of the band's Waylon and Co. You know, the Anco is pretty
much.
So
where can people
me.
Find out about your shows and stuff? Since I'm trying to give you a plug here.
Instagram, check us out, Waylon and Co.
Waylon and Co.
WAYLON. And then Facebook, we're on there as well. And we're getting out there. Been a hit so far. I'm enjoying it. It's got legs. And starting up my original project later this fall, Black Hoss.
Oh.
Yep.
Nice. HOSS.
You'd be having me on, they'd be like, we got Black Hoss on the show today. So, anyhow, that's enough of
I knew it would be fun having you here.
Last 5 years, been a gardener, and now I'm ready to just, I don't know, talk about live albums, right?
You don't look like a gardener, you look like a rock star, dude. All right, so listen, we have a doozy of a topic for you folks out there listening today, and I had to get somebody that I knew could go toe-to-toe with me on that, so I got Craig. We're going to do the greatest live albums of all time, okay? The greatest live albums of all time. Forgive me because most of mine are from the 70s, but what can I say? It was the greatest period of all time. But we're going to do our top. We're try and do our top 10. Craig's telling me he doesn't have his in order. So this is what we can do, Craig. You go through your list. Right. I'll chime in, you know, if I want to, if I feel like I need to. And then we'll go through my list. So people out there listening, I hope you're buckled in with your seat. You got your lunch and your cocktail and whatever by your side. We're going to talk about the greatest live albums of all time. You're on, Craig Mack.
I'm first.
You're first.
All right. And I must say, like you said, these aren't in any order, so I'm not saying this is the top 10, but there may be a point where I actually throw a number on one of these albums.
And by the way, we did not tell each other what our list was.
I have an idea.
We didn't even tell Mike Newman. We didn't tell anybody.
There's a couple of albums I really hope you didn't put down, but we'll just get to that, you know, when we do.
Well, I think if we have some of the same, that's a good thing. You know?
The first album that comes to mind when I had to make my list is an album by one of my favorite R&B artists from the 60s of the Impressions. Curtis Mayfield.
Ooh.
When he left the Impressions, he got this band together, and they played, I believe, in Chicago at a nightclub. And it's actually just called Curtis Live.
Wow.
It's the most amazing.
That's a good one.
Sounding live album. Yeah, I hope people are gonna like go check these out.
Curtis Mayfield's one of the coolest.
So you've never heard it, so you're gonna love it. And you know that particular album, like I said, they recorded that in a Chicago nightclub. It was right after he left the Impressions, and it was I think his first release on his label Curtum, which he called it Curtum. But anyhow, yeah, it was just this real funky. Laid back, not too many people in the nightclub. Maybe, the people at Sharon, there's a lot of political statement going on, a lot of things, talking about junkies, talking about corrupt politicians. It is like the epitome of what you would want from Curtis Mayfield. And he does all his classic stuff from like Superfly. But the great thing about it is that even though it was live, it was mixed by Eddie Kramer at Electric Ladyland Studios.
The best.
So that I love that album. That album, you put that on, and you swear these guys are in your living room.
Okay, you already took me by surprise with your first one. I can hardly wait to
hear. Are we going to switch on and off this way?
No, let's do all yours first.
All right, all mine first. All right, well, another one, I guess to say when I got into live albums, I'm not going to go back to the first live album that I heard, but if I were to say that, it wasn't a band I like or even... I'm not a band I was into or I collected their albums with, but it was Chicago's Live at Carnegie Hall. My father owned that album. That thing was humongous. I didn't even have the strength to open it up,
Is this early Chicago with Terry Kath?
Yes.
Yeah, because without Terry Kath, it's sappy. But with Terry Kath, it's like...
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But that album was like, as far as the first live album I heard, I remember hearing that over the stereo that my father built, these huge speakers, probably like 500 watt amp or whatever it was. But that in terms of what is the first live sound of a band you heard, I'd have to say that it was that, so I threw that down just as sort of a notation. Basically the live album, I think, is something that it goes deeper than just a band playing in front of an audience.
What do you mean by that?
Well, is it a good performance? Is the band on? Are they doing things a little differently? Are they giving you something different than the studio version? And who produced it? Did the band take that live experience and overdub it in the studio? Because does that mean that, was there something wrong with it? If you got an overdub on a live album, I don't know. But anyhow, all these questions come around, and I was looking for some real raw albums, like cut from the soundboard.
I'm impressed so far, dude. You picked two records that are not on my list. But, I'm not going to say anything bad about Chicago.
I'm not going to go home and listen to that album right now. Maybe I will. But the point is, it's just that first memory of what a live album should sound like.
Terry Kath, by the way, one of the greatest guitar players of all time.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable.
Really good
stuff. And I also liked the bass player, too. Peter Cetera.
Yeah, well.
Those guys were good.
Yeah, well, he was the pallbearer in that band. He was a songwriter. When they needed real songs and not like this live experience in the 80s, no one really wanted to hear the horns anymore, I don't think.
Most people, like maybe closer to my age, can remember hearing Color My World at their high school prom.
Yeah. Yeah.
But 25 or 624 is one of the great. And I'm a Man, the live version of that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have a bunch of Saturday in the Park. They have a lot of good songs.
Well, let me move on to the next one, which would be.
Please do.
Definitely one of my favorite live albums, performance, sound, and by one of my favorite guitar players, and everyone else's too, Jimi Hendrix, Band of Gypsies.
Oh, yeah.
The first release, because the second release gave you sort of alternate cuts from that night, gave you the whole experience, and there's some great stuff on that, no doubt. But, releasing a song, an album that has like six live songs or whatever, or, not too much, it just gives you enough to really digest.
Yeah.
And Hendrix, there's a lot of mileage to his music, guitar playing, if you're into sitting and listening to that. But this is the first album that he played with a different band, the Band of Gypsies. Buddy Miles on drums.
They were great.
I mean, Buddy Miles on drums, Buddy Cox on bass. And it was the direction he was going into. He wanted to go more into that funkadelic type of thing. Hendrix didn't die. George Clinton would have been working with him probably.
Yeah, imagine if Jimi Hendrix was
notable song
life.
On that album. Always, Machine Gun.
Machine Gun.
Machine Gun. Wow. Next, we brought up my project that I've been involved with, Waylon Jennings. Well, one of the reasons I started doing this tribute band was that I heard the live album, the expanded version of Waylon Jennings' live album from 1975, which was recorded in Dallas. And the original album, it was put on vinyl in the 70s. I think it came out 78 maybe. And it was compiled from one or two shows. I could be wrong. However, though, the expanded version, all 40 songs in like an hour and a half. It's amazing.
And you know every single song by Waylon Jennings.
Not all of them. I mean, but that album, pretty much most of the songs on that album, I go for it. Because that album is a good blueprint of what his live band sound like.
Yeah.
And it's the best. I'll say it right now. A lot of people be like, uh-uh. Well, if you haven't heard this album, you got to kind of slow the roll. I know everyone's going to go to Johnny Cash, Folsom Prison. Best live album, one of them, absolutely.
Is that on your list?
I can't see it. It might be somewhere on there. Hold on.
Well, you know, so far the
yeah, four, no, it's on there.
The first four records you named are not on my list.
All right, so these two albums are going to get hit together because they're two iconic.
So you're
going to
Johnny Cash, which is also on my list.
Johnny Cash, Folsom Prison. Everyone knows that to be one of the greatest live albums,
and
one of the only perhaps like exclusive live country albums that everyone loves, Rock and Rollers or whatever, because it was recorded in a prison. So you have that, right? But Waylon Live is actually, you know, playing out for all these like people that were really loving where he was going. I mean, this is his fans, you know. It was sort of in the beginning of his peak, if not, in my opinion, his peak. So you had a 6-piece ensemble, pedal steel, harmonica, guitars, you know. These guys were like, they're playing outlaw country music, but before it was called outlaw. These guys were a bunch of independent like artists doing country their way with the intensity of rock and roll music, and you can hear it on this live album. And the great thing, it's probably, in my opinion, one of the best live crowds on an album, because it's like you feel like you're in a honky tonk. You know, halfway through you got it loud enough. You're looking over your shoulder, making sure a beer bottle's not going to hit you in the back of the head.
Outlaw country. You know, it's funny because I don't like to hear people like this get associated with country music, because I think country music has become so horrible. I would hate to put Johnny Cash and Merle Haggard and Kris Kristofferson and Waylon Jennings into that category.
I don't put
Steve Earle or Lucinda Williams in that category.
So I hear what you're saying, right? Lucinda, Steve, all the people that you mentioned, Waylon, that is country music. The problem is the people who, the industry that's making money off of country music, those people aren't country. They're just rehashed, remixed solo artists that have a brand. You know, maybe I'm not getting on people that have a connection and like artists, and I'm not getting into that. But the industry, it's there. And I've said this a million times, said it on podcasts. Contemporary country music industry is selling pickup trucks. That's music.
Oversized ones.
Pickup truck commercials, you know? Like,
I agree.
Yeah, that's
Jason
what's happening.
Jason Aldean and... It's
also the soundtrack for the nationalist Christian movement. If you look deep into what's going on, I don't mean anything against people who are Christian, that's fine. But when you need an industry fueling your religious beliefs, I think there's something incredibly wrong with that, but I don't know.
I love the way the Dixie Chicks stomped them down into the ground.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, them I like.
But that's the thing. It's okay. But before country got corrupt, there were artists. It's just songwriters, folk music. Willie Nelson. He's country. He's other things too. But
I have a
country.
Hard time putting him in that category as well, you know.
I know
like outlaw
from,
country.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, I like the genre outlaw country.
Country gets a bad name, though. That's the thing. It's okay
and
to
like
country music.
Alt country is like Sunvolt and Lucinda and Steve Earle. You know, that's alt.
You want to hear another country band that nobody gives credit to? The Wu-Tang Clan.
Wow.
bunch of guys, outlaws, doing this, that, and the other thing. Got a hard outlaw image, right? Gangster image, if you will. But they're telling stories that are more true than the stuff I hear coming out of Nashville.
Never heard this this angle before.
Commercial.
This is an interesting angle.
Anyhow, though, that's what I love about. I mean, country music. No, it's okay to say I like country music. It's okay to say whatever music you like, but make sure what you're really referring to. You know, you can call it classic country, but if you feel that you'll be put on the spot or judged, just make it clear that, you know.
I hear you.
It's only music.
So what else you got on your list of greatest live albums ever?
So this one, oh boy, this is one of my favorite live albums because I had it on cassette. And to me, it was like when I first, even before Jimi Hendrix, when I first heard like the intensity of guitar. I know he's not cool to like anymore, but Ted Nugent, Double Gonzo live.
I can't believe I let you come on my show, man. Oh, my God.
No. Look at. So here we go again. Well, I'm not talking about politics here.
Okay.
That dude could play the guitar in the 70s. Stranglehold.
I'm going to put you in a stranglehold.
No. Strangleholds. I ain't turning that song off when it comes on. I ain't conservative. I ain't any of that stuff. This is music we're talking about. Before the man started.
He had his run. Something. He had his run, you're right.
But exactly. And during that run he made a great live album.
And I know that you don't stand with his politics, so I guess.
We shouldn't even
talk about politics.
Well, no, we don't.
Sorry.
Right, cuz that's what's happening. Music's becoming politicized. I think that was the point I was making. But that's all right. You know, people have their boundaries and their guidelines. Would I go put that album on right now, or if I were playing if I were in the engineer's
seat?
Yeah,
you
want to
hear
right
a little
now.
Wango Tango. I know you do.
It's just how can you deny the album that you once liked? You know, I'm sure people love Woody Allen films, but they don't want to talk about that anymore. All right, so the next one, let's get sweet, shall
bringing
we?
The controversy to the podcast.
Let's get sweet,
folks.
Shall we? We lost one of the greatest performers in we lost a lot of great performers in 2016. And no, folks, I'm not talking about David Bowie. I'm talking about Prince.
Oh, well.
And okay, so did Prince really have a legit live album? He did, but it was released as a box set, and you know, with Prince, you had to buy, you know, one Easter egg to get to the next Easter egg, you know. But the album he released, it's a box set, One Night Alone Live. It's the first live Prince release. Not a very popular one. It's hard to get. I think you can find it probably on the internet now, stream it or whatever, or buy it. Point is, though, he really had it with New Power Generation. That band was in their prime, and they did all the great Prince songs. His guitar playing is amazing. It's recorded, like I was telling you, like it wasn't about how many people were in the audience screaming. It was about really how well these guys played that night.
You can't deny Prince's greatness.
I was very sad when the guy died because I felt like I abandoned his music in the early 2000s, maybe even in the 90s. And then when I went back to it, I was like, oh, I wasn't listening close enough, or I wasn't really understanding what he was doing. But it was all the religious and political stuff that was surrounding him at the time. It turned me off. Just like one gets turned off by Ted Nugent and his beef jerky.
Interesting. I didn't feel the same way about Prince. The thing that I noticed about Prince that was kind of neglected for years is his phenomenal guitar playing. I mean, the guy is in a league. He's one of the greatest guitarists ever. When I heard him do While My Guitar Gently Weeps, everyone's probably saw that on YouTube at the All-Star Jam with Tom Petty and those guys. he put on a clinic.
You know, that song gets... Clinic. Yeah, no, he did. Because he was in, to be on stage playing, like sharing solos with those guys, it's pretty good for him to do that. It was like...
Oh, no one could do the solo like him, though.
Well, I think after that, he said, you know what? I can die now. No, but he threw the guitar up in the air too and caught it, right? And so, but my thing though with Prince,
did
though,
he catch it? Because that's not in the video. I always wondered
maybe
where the guitar
else
went.
It. I don't know.
I always wonder where that guitar went. If you watch it, he throws it up and then you never see it come down.
Right. You know what?
Where'd
it go? I think I'm creating a Mandela effect here.
Now, I'm thinking there might have been someone out in the crowd, you know, one of his guys that caught the guitar and they just edited it or something.
Well, someone got injured by it. But no, yeah, you know, that Prince, closing on Prince, though, if you really want to, like, a lot of his live stuff, you can lot of cool stuff on YouTube. It's a song called Joy in Repetition off the Graffiti Bridge album.
Deep track.
One of my favorite guitar solos. And when he does it live, I mean, man, he cuts through. So, oh, and if you haven't heard Prince Do Spanish Castle Magic by Jimi Hendrix, you just have not heard how good the guy can play the guitar. So, next, discovered this album in 2001. The editor of Dig Boston asked me if I ever heard Hawkwind, and I'm like, no.
Ooh, wow. Nah.
He's like, you ever hear of Motorhead? And I'm like, yeah.
And he's like, Hawkwind.
Do you like Motorhead?
That.
And I'm like, yeah. But no, I wasn't a huge Motorhead fan, but I just, the right people always turned me back onto them. And now, I mean, you know, I just love the, I love what Motorhead, you know, sounded like, particularly, not live, but Hawkwind.
Space rock.
Amazing album. You know, like, and I think it was an album that, I forget what album it was based upon, whatever album came out around that time, but it was more of a live interpretation. It was a concept album, live or whatever. There's some sci-fi sort of like horror scenario or whatever, but I still can't say I've every time I listen to it, I hear something different, and that's what I love. But the fact that they did this stuff live in 1972 and sometimes when I was about to swear, I just lose the word. But you know,
you're doing good though, man.
They had the guff to do what they did live.
Guff.
Okay, I want to quickly go through
the
a little
FCC
bit more.
The FCC doesn't mind guff, right, Mike?
They do not. I don't mind it either.
They don't like getting guff. But.
You got two more to go, Craig.
I got more to go. Oh, I got two more to go. All right. Well, all right. So
save your extras until the end, and we'll do our extras at the end, because I wanted to see if we could. We were going to cross over, but we're not crossing over. We've only got one record that we've crossed over on so far.
Oh, man, I don't... All right, so I got to pick two more, right? All right.
He didn't even pick his top 10. See what I mean?
There's just too many.
Waylon.
I keep Waylon.
Come on, Waylon.
Waylon Rivers.
I'm not going to let you live that
there
down.
You go. There we go. Waylon Rivers. Oh, man. All right, I got to... this is tough. All right. All right, I'm going to narrow it down quickly. All right, Sinatra live at the Sands.
What?
Yeah, you know why? All right, I know. Again, stop. Don't politicize my...
Anyone Elvis, does Sinatra, this, whatever, you know.
We'll be having a... Just the next show, we'll be having, you know...
No, it's not going to be a next show.
First off...
I'm just kidding.
Frank Sinatra is one of the greatest performers ever.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Not the greatest singers. Tony Bennett was better than him as a singer, in my
opinion. I prefer Dean Martin, but you know.
Whatever you prefer, but he was this guy could just captivate an audience. I don't want to get into it because it's just too much. You know how many books have been written on Sinatra in documentaries and
what's the live album that you like?
Live
by
at the
Sinatra?
Sands from from Vegas.
Okay. Live at the Sands.
Yes. And that kind of was like, I don't know, you know, I'm not gonna pretend I know everything about that album, but I will say that Frank Sinatra, Quincy Jones, and Count Basie. That's what that concert was about. And the stuff that I really gravitate to Frank Sinatra is the stuff he did with Count Basie. And music is like hard hitting, punching, like, and it's like, yeah, that's, I said, No, but it's very hard. It's just hard hitting, like big band jazz. And it's very fitting for the Sinatra's delivery and cadence. And I guess that's all I would say.
Is Summer Wind on that record? Because I love that song.
I believe so, yeah, yeah. I'd have to go back and like...
Always remember, you know, Pope of Greenwich Village. Remember that film? Charlie, they cut my thumb off. Eric Roberts.
That's
and
the
Mickey
edited.
Rourke. Talk about an unbelievable pair.
But it was recorded in the Copa Room. At the Sands Hotel in Vegas, 1966, which was a really amazing year because the guy kind of came back a little bit.
I don't think I have a record recorded before 60s. That might be the earliest one on our entire list.
That's right. But yeah, that one I really go to all the time. It's just one of those things. You put an album on and you want to feel like you're at the show. You know, like, I mean, one of the greatest live bands, in my opinion, is the Grateful Dead, even though they're not like my top band. And I go, oh, you got to check the Dead out, and blah, 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 blah. Just because I'm wearing a bandana today, it don't mean I'm Deadhead or anything.
I never would call you a Deadhead.
But I love the guys. I love how they explored music like country, blues, and stuff, and then got real psychedelic and crazy with it. But
The best thing I think they ever did was Dylan and the band.
Well, I don't want to get far off topic here. I'm not switching gears here from Sinatra at the Sands. I'm just making, as far as the Grateful Dead shows go, I love listening to those bootlegs from start to finish because you feel like there's a duration of like time. It's real time.
So is there a Grateful Dead record in your top 10 or not, Craig?
In everyone's top 10 in the sense they would say Live from Europe. But that's, to me, you know, that's just a compilation. So that's why I didn't pick it. They only have they have other albums out too, but it's just that particular one is great, one of the greatest sounding live albums, but it's a compilation of Europe dates.
Okay, so we'll let you pick one more then.
All right,
we won't
one
count
more.
That.
See how I slip another one in with the other one? Like that, don't you? Watch how I've put four into this one. All right, hold on. I'm using my phone.
If you don't come up with your 10th one soon, I'm going to jump into
all right, the 10th one has to be...
You're monopolizing the time.
The 10th one has to be not what I would like it to be, but what it is. It's the Allman Brothers' Fillmore East. Right, and I know you had that on your list probably too.
I don't remember if it's
all right,
on my list or not.
That, I can't... How can you argue? Listen to that, right? Like, if you want...
It's a good record.
Everything is heard on that album.
Yeah.
And some. It's like a studio recording.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I've seen the Allman Brothers like three or four times, and early Allman Brothers, I didn't see Dwayne, but they were amazing. Every time I saw them, they were amazing. I remember at Woodstock 94, they went on at noon when I saw them the second day, I think. Yep. They were fantastic.
One day I was in the mood to hear the Allman. I just woke up, like, it was like 2013, summer of 2013. I was down in Florida. It's around Thanksgiving. I was with this girl I was dating and a mother, the two of them. And they, there was two of them.
I have no comment to that.
So I'm down there, and they're like, weren't very nice to me when I was on the beach relaxing. I was listening to the Allman Brothers, and I had like a six pack of beer there. And they wanted
six cases
of beer.
That's a lot of beer.
They wanted me to go shopping with them, and I said, nah, I think I'll just stay here and I'm just chilling, you know, like, you know, doing my thing. And her mother was so appalled at me, you know, just wanting there to sit there and listen to the Allman Brothers and all my quote unquote hippie music of that day. And so they sort of just were like, you know what? Let them sit there. We'll go shopping. Enjoy your day. You know, it was just a memory where I felt like I defied the situation by just sticking to my guns and listening to my music.
Until they came back and you were tied to the whipping post.
Right, actually. Right, whipping post.
Okay, you ready for mine?
I'm ready.
Did I give you enough time?
Yeah, no, you did. I hope I didn't take too much.
I did mine in order, too. My list is very different than yours. Number one, Queen, Live Killers.
Knew it.
Double album. Came out in 79, in between Jazz and the Game. It was a very creative time for the band. It's the only place I believe you can actually hear what's called the fast version of We Will Rock You. It's a separate song. Just an amazing record.
They it's
go
a better
from
version.
We Will Rock You right into Let Me Entertain You. Yeah. I was lucky to see the band three times between 77 and 79, and I look at that list of songs in the playlist, and I'm like, pretty sure I saw the tour that they did that exact set list on, which I'm pretty happy about. Number two on my list, The Last Waltz, which is the last concert by the band with Robbie Robertson. Neil Young was there, Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Van the Man, Eric Clapton. Incredible concert, which people want to see the film, but they forget that it's actually an album too. It's a double album, and it's a real good one. Any comments about The Last Waltz?
No, but comment about Queen?
I know, I went fast there, didn't I?
Yeah,
sorry.
Well, I mean, so that I was thinking about putting that one down because that was one of the albums that when I was growing up, my brother was really into. So that was, I think, one of his favorite albums, of Queen too, at the time. I don't know in terms of retrospect, you know, but yeah, good album. Good.
You know, Queen had another live album too, Live at Wembley, and now there's that Live in Montreal.
Yeah, but
Live Killers was, they were raw.
That's Queen.
It was 70s raw sounding, and it was in your, there's like, everything's on that record. Yeah. It's incredible.
No, that's them in their prime.
It's before the Game, so nothing from the Game and afterwards is
no
on
no top 40
it.
Stuff there.
On my number three record, I saw this band open for Queen, Thin Lizzy. Live and Dangerous, 1978, Phil Lynott, Scott Gorham, Brian Robertson, and drummer Brian Downey, Jailbreak, Cowboy Song, Boys Are Back in Town, The Rocker, Johnny the Fox Meets Jimmy the Weed. It was a gatefold album. I had it. I don't know what happened to it, but it's one of the greatest live albums. You can find those tracks online and listen to them. They were on fire. Thin Lizzy.
Comment?
If you have one.
You know, at this point, and people have really tried to force Thin Lizzy on, just one of the bands I never got into. I mean, I respect them. I mean, there's songs that, you know, hold weight and they're on the radio, but I don't know. When people, if a group of people, it's like when someone brings a sport team that I don't like, I usually walk out the door. I don't have anything to talk about. You know, another band's AC/DC, so anyhow, go ahead.
Okay, for people out there that think I'm judgmental, yeah. I've allowed Craig to talk about Ted Nugent, and I've allowed him to put down Thin Lizzy in the same show, and I haven't kicked him out of the studio yet and used any vulgarities, okay? So, but we'll leave it at that, okay? Gonna get a little feisty now.
However, though, one of the top 50 albums of all time, regardless of what the hell I think.
What? Who?
Thin Lizzy.
Oh, Jailbreak.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know.
But live album is just, I think it's great.
I'll listen to it.
Number four, I mean, easily could have been number one on my list. Lou Reed, Rock and Roll Animal, 1974. Ooh. Just simply based on the incredible opening intro of Sweet Jane with Steve Hunter and Dick Wagner, two like unheralded guitar virtuosos who incidentally got called in to play on Aerosmith's Get Your Wings album when those guys couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And they did Train Kept a Rollin'. You know, I don't know. I think there was something involved with Aerosmith at the time. But that record, you know, Heroin's also on
that. That might have been involved with them at the time.
Yeah, Rock and Roll, Heroin, White Light, White Heat. Lou Reed, just absolutely rock and roll.
Yeah, animal. Man. You know, I forgot about that album. That is a live album.
One
that
of us did
live
research.
Album. Yeah.
I'm just busting your chops, man. Right. I do nothing but research. My whole life is all about research.
With that said, he's going to be tonight at home. He's going to have Double Gonzo. On. Oh, like, talking about?
Hey, listen, I'm going to go. I'll tell you right, Curtis Live.
You're
I'm
going
to be listening to that record because I didn't, and the Prince thing too. I'm going to listen to that, and you know, maybe even Sinatra. Who knows, man? You never know. You ready for number five? Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Live Rust, 1979. Mm-hmm. With Crazy Horse, who I've seen Neil with and without Crazy Horse, Neil's at his very best. This record is like a greatest hits record live. Sugar Mountain, these are some of my favorite songs. Sugar Mountain, The Loner, Cortez the Killer, Like a Hurricane, Powderfinger. Just an amazing album. I saw Neil with Crazy Horse. I saw him do a thing with other musicians that weren't Crazy Horse, and I also saw him with Booker T and the MGs, and he was good every time. Neil Young live. Woo.
Booker T as his backup. Man.
Yeah, he had Booker T backing him up. I don't know, but I do remember, I think it was early 90s, I do remember that Social Distortion and Stone Temple Pilots were the two opening bands. It was the Sports Arena in L.A.
I would have gotten a beer during that last band, but
one thing I should have mentioned, or we both could have mentioned beforehand, is like seeing a band live is like to me the greatest thing. You can listen to any studio record and love it. You can listen to the White Album and go, this is amazing. But seeing them live is great. Hearing a live album is great, but it's not as great as seeing the actual show live.
It's true, because some of the best live bands, and we could talk about this, haven't put an album out.
Yeah, I mean, well, look at all of my records I'm naming are probably all in the 70s. I mean, what were the great live records that came out in the 90s? Yeah, I can't name
any. No,
it.
I mean, well, you know that.
I can't name any.
I could name a couple, but they're not.
Well, I mean, off the top of my head, I can't. I'm actually going to go all the way to 1970 with my fifth album on the list, and I wish I could swear to announce this one, but I can't. MC5, Kick Out the Jams. You fill in the blanks. A live album is one thing, but to be your debut album live.
Yeah.
And I was talking to our friend Alvin Long about this, and I'm like, how did they ever think of doing a live album for their debut? And he said one thing. John Sinclair, who is their manager, came up with the idea, and it's absolutely I know you guys have heard Kick Out the Jams, but anybody out there that hasn't, you got to listen to it. It's a band that's just absolutely
smoking. Was it a plan?
Smoking.
Was it a plan to release it as their first?
John Sinclair's plan. It was recorded in Detroit and, you know, their hometown.
Did he ever try to get those guys in the studio before he made that decision?
I can't answer that question.
Probably why they said, let's just cut the live album.
No one can really answer that because all the members of MC5 and John Sinclair are all gone now.
Right.
So I don't know who we can get to answer that question.
We can get a medium in here. There's a show for you.
All right, number six. Like
a rock and roll medium. I'll come on your show next as the rock and roll medium.
By the way, I'm a lot more adamant about my list than anyone would be because I think any one of these could be the number one. Number six, Deep Purple, Made in Japan, 1972.
Yeah.
Being a teenage kid. I can hear you smirking over there. Being a teenage kid with a hockey stick in front of a mirror and doing space trucking for 10 minutes, that was my idea of fun back then.
Can I just, why a hockey stick and not a tennis racket or a broom? Something that looks more like a guitar.
Because I played a lot of hockey
back then. All
right,
that's all.
Okay, I liked, you know, Terry O'Reilly and the Bruins back then. What can I tell you? But that record right there, you know, is unbelievable. And it came out in 1972. It was like, these are all 70s albums I'm talking about here. It's incredible.
That was your time. That's where you took it all in. I'm not too far behind you, man. I just threw one at 66.
Okay,
I wasn't even born.
That's your way of saying that you are younger than me. And that's fine. You are younger than me, but don't rub it in, okay? Just, you don't have to
rub it in. Much. No, but no, I mean, no, it's just, it's, but the thing is that my point is that the eras we're talking about, I mean, you said, what's the greatest live album of the 90s? Doesn't even come close to the onslaught of albums that came out during the
70s. I just thought of one, and it's one of my honorable mentions. Nirvana, Unplugged.
Right,
that came out in the 90s. That could be one. That would be in my top 20.
Here's one that I hated, but
not
it was
my
very
top 10, but it's
one that I hated, but was huge. It was Eric Clapton's Unplugged.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Boy,
at
Clapton.
All.
Man, talk about a guy that gets shredded now. Oh, my God.
What?
I mean, when he's a lot of people don't like Eric Clapton anymore. When he was younger in the 60s, he was unbelievable. With John Mayall, Cream, Derek and the Dominoes.
Great stuff.
I mean,
great stuff.
Blind
no.
Faith.
No,
but
I don't dislike the man. I just think that live album, though, was, I just never, whatever. I'm not going to, it's not my lane.
He cheesed out a bit. He came back with the Crossroads series and everything, but he got a little cheesy. Here's another record, my number seven record, that easily could be number one. And this record made this band, Cheap Trick, live at Budokan, at Budokan, 1979. I Want You to Want Me.
So the reason I didn't even put it down, because I knew you held the weight in terms of making that, you know, because you were probably in your teens when that album came out.
You know, I was talking to my good friend Ted Williams today. He's in the movie business. He's working on Superman right now, and we were talking about live albums, and you know, we were talking about Cheap Trick, and it dawned on me, what rock and roll Hall of Fame band have I seen the most times?
Mm-hmm.
Aerosmith would be the most, but then Cheap Trick.
Yeah,
I've seen Cheap Trick so many times.
Me too. No, I mean, they are
so many.
They are my number one American rock and roll band. Grew up loving all the albums, knew them all. Budokan, I listened to it, right? But you
that's
never
a
get,
show right
but
there.
But the audience on that album, I wish you could just take it out. And they did. On the 30th anniversary, they lowered the Japanese audience screaming over the band. It's so important to not. Who cares if there's an audience? Like I said, it's not important. That album suffered for a long time until they really released the full Monty out. And that's my favorite one. I know it was released way later, 2013, but the 30th anniversary, it gives you, if you're a Cheap Trick fan, you know, it gives you everything on that.
What
album,
I remember about at Budokan was, you know, Surrender, of course, was on that, but they did Ain't That a Shame, the cover, and it gave a whole new audience a great song that they probably wouldn't have heard.
Well, that and all those songs were performed at high volume, like the way people were seeing Cheap Trick live, but a lot of those songs, if you listen to the studio versions, were very studio recorded, arranged songs where they had piano. I Want You to Want Me. big famous rock and roll tune that everyone loves to cover by Cheap Trick. The studio version, it's a country tune. Listen to the honky tonk piano playing, and every song I listened, it's got piano on it.
Wu-Tang Clan, yeah. And Cheap Trick both became country bands.
From Waylon to the Wu-Tang.
Incredible.
It's all the same.
Okay, number 8 on my list is the only record that we had. That you had on your list and I had. I Can't Leave, Johnny Cash, Live at Folsom Prison, 1968, off of the greatest live list of all time. No. It would be impossible to do that. And we don't even have to talk anymore about that.
We could, because real quick, think about what you're hearing on that album. You're hearing a bunch of Cash songs that he'd never performed live before. The man is finally clean. Or, I mean, he cleaned up.
Was he clean during the Folsom Prison?
Yeah, that was the whole thing of his. That was a jump start back to his
career. Oh, yeah,
that
makes sense, because he went into a prison. I'm sure he wasn't all messed up.
Well, there's a point where he's like in between the tune, and he's like, hey, can you grab my leather bag over there? You know, the one I keep my drugs in. You know, there's a lot of banter going on. There's prisoner reaction. People love reactions. No matter, like, if even on YouTube, people, I was watching some old guy react to, like, Wu-Tang or whatever, you know, stuff like that, not to bring the Wu-Tang up again.
Yeah, the line about where he shot a man and blah, 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 the crowd went nuts.
Right, but people believe that. Johnny Cash was a storyteller, but there were country guys who, when they told you that something happened, they were telling the truth.
Yeah.
There wasn't too many of them, but...
Right, I only get two more on my list, and I'm going to give you a bunch of my honorable mentions. Number 9, okay, this is not one of my favorite bands, but this record, when it came out in 1975, and you're in high school, you're in freshman high school, and Kiss Alive comes out, how can you not be, like, blown completely away? You wanted the best, you got it. The hottest band in the land.
Yep.
Now, when you hear that and you're 13 years old, you're like... Wow, these guys are great. And then they Deuce, Firehouse, all the tunes on it. And then Rock and Roll All Night was like played to death.
What?
The live version.
You think? It still is. And I need to call a couple radio stations after and say, can you find another Kiss song to beat into the ground? while we're on the same conversation on the phone, I got a long list of bands that there's other songs by. But Kiss Alive, right? Iconic, right?
Yeah.
And you want the best. You got the best. Hottest band in the world, Kiss.
The one thing I will say about Kiss is I do really like one of their albums. Rock and Roll Over, I think, is my favorite Kiss album. And then, as far as live, obviously, I just put them in my top 10 live albums.
Not the first album, though?
I didn't really hear the first. I didn't hear those
good.
Two records until. Well, I've heard them now, but I didn't hear Strutter and all those tunes until Kiss Alive came out. And then I'm oh, wow. You know, we got to find Kiss albums now.
No, I mean, the first two albums are very much, you know, and they're important.
But I like Rock and Roll Over the best. You know, put your hand in my pocket and grab onto my rocket. Yeah. I mean, it's like a
lyricism
really good
at its finest.
You know, I mean,
Bob Dylan has nothing on that.
Stupid. Yeah, it wasn't me.
I know.
Keep it simple, stupid. Yeah. You know, what's the whole band based on?
No, it's true.
Stupidity.
That's right. I mean, they were talking about their lifestyle.
Exactly.
You know, another band that didn't lie about what they were singing about. You know.
It's really funny, I'll tell a quick story here. We'll probably go over a little, but you're okay with that, Mike, right?
I am, and because we're live on the air, I'm going to say this is 91.5 WMFO, Medford, 1 p.m.
Yes, and you made my 91.5 MF. You should have told me to do the ID. I would have done an ID.
Yeah.
I love IDs.
You can do it next time, Steve.
I don't know if I'll be here at 2 o'clock.
You can,
but
you can pull a horn.
I was
going
to just tell a story I've told many times. You know, there was this band called The Click. They became The Click Five, right? I was in Boston managing bands when I moved back here. Their manager Wayne used to be Kiss's tour manager. He came to me one day and he knew I was booking a couple nights at the Abbey Lounge, right, not too far from here on the Cambridge Somerville line, and he asked me if I could get The Click Five on a show there because he could get the guys from Kiss to come up and check out the band at the Abbey. And I was like, oh boy, I don't know if that'll ever happen, but we'll do it. So I got the Charms, right, who opened our show today with their song So Pretty, which has been the theme song of my show since day one. And they played, and the Click Five opened, and we're at the Abbey Lounge, and there's like 30 people there, and Michelle Dent is working the door, and I'm telling Michelle, some guys from Kiss might show. Ha ha ha, right, okay, whatever. All of a sudden, the limo pulls up in front of the Abbey Lounge. Paul Stanley, Tommy Thayer was the guitar player. They get out of the limo. Doc McGee is with them. Doc McGee, one of the great managers of all time. They came into the Abbey Lounge. They're wearing high heels. Paul Stanley, look about 10 feet tall. They came in the Abbey and they watched the Click Five.
What year was that?
This is 2003 or 4.
Really? I never knew that. And I was I worked for magazine at the time.
Gene
in Boston.
Didn't come, but Paul was there.
Of course he didn't.
And Tommy Thayer was the guitar player.
You would have had to pay him to come. But Paul Stanley, I think, was coming to Boston a lot because he had, I think he was doing art at the time.
Yeah, it was cool. I got to meet, honestly, I was more excited to meet Doc McGee than I was to meet the guys in Kiss. Sorry, I just banged my head against the microphone. I do that when I'm generally doing my podcast too, so it's not the first time.
So that's that live, huh?
Yeah. I got one more record. Number 10. Ready? Get Your Ya-Ya's Out, 1970 to Rolling Stones. Mick Taylor era just started. The thing about that record that you have to listen to if you listen to is the live version of the Midnight Ramblers.